This is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. What did Elvis give to his mother on this very day back in 1956? Was that A, a dog, B, a house, C, a pink Cadillac, or D, a sandwich made out of peanut butter, bacon, and bananas? What did Elvis give to his mom in 1956 today? And question number two, what was the name of the George Harrison composition that was the former Beatle found guilty of copying from the song He's So Fine? Was that A, Hey Jude? Was it B, Here Comes the Sun? Was it C, My Sweet Lord? Or was it D, Let It Be? So which of Harrison's songs was copied? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August 30th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1653, that composer Johann Pachelbel was born. Pachelbel was known for such compositions as his Canon in D major. Born today, back in 1653. And it was 29 years ago today, 1995, in Cleveland, Ohio, that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and Museum ribbon-cutting ceremony took place. The museum officially opened the next day. Ribbon-cutting today. In 1995. And in country music news, we have this article titled, Guthrie Trapp Says Country Music Should Change Its Name to Southern Pop because it's gotten away from the actual sound of the music as it's supposed to be. Trapp made the admission during a chat about some bad studio experiences. And this is published in Guitar.com by Rachel Roberts on August 23rd, 2024. Guthrie Trapp feels the country genre has shifted so much it should be given a new name entirely. Trapp has played for a magnitude of artists, including the likes of ZZ Top's Billy Gibbons and Dolly Parton. Earlier this year, he also released a brand new studio album with session musician and producer Tom Buckovac in Stereo is the title of it. From his experience of working with a range of artists, Trap feels country has taken a huge step away from its original sound. Speaking to Guitar Player alongside Bukovac, for its new print issue, Trap explains, country music is the only genre where it's gotten away from the actual sound of the music as it's supposed to be. They should change the name to Southern Pop. It seems the duo are rather happy to have put out their own music, as sometimes working in studios for others can prove difficult when you have a difference in creative opinion. Of his experiences of working on other projects, Trap goes on to add, studio musicians are never going to tell you about the records they had to play on that were really bad. They're not going to tell you about the songs that they had to spend 3 days playing that were just the absolute worst you've ever heard in your life, he explains. I was raised around good music with good songwriters and a lot of bluegrass and acoustic music. So it was very painful to try and do that, and I'm not a good politician. I couldn't sit there and pretend that I liked the music. I was always the cat that was the oddball and the outsider. And in classical music news, we have a continuation of the article started last week by BBC Music Magazine titled 15 Badly Behaved Composers. So we start today's three with number three, Henry Purcell. For 1900's Helsinki and Sibelius, read 1680's London and Purcell. A more than regular in the English capital's inns, Purcell's lists of compositions include a fair number of bawdy drinking songs. Sadly, however, his habit of coming home late, drunk, and disorderly may well have proved his downfall. In contrast to Sibelius's watchful approach, Frances Purcell is said to have simply locked her wayward husband out one chilly evening. The bout of pneumonia that soon followed proved to be fatal. Number four, Gabriel Fauré. Maybe Purcell would have done better to have simply carried on drinking through the night. This is just what Fauré once did while working as a church organist in the 1860s. Turning up for the morning service, still dressed in his evening tie and tails, the clergy, who already took a stern view of his tendency to pop out of the organ loft for a cigarette during the sermon, were none too impressed. And at number five today, it's Thomas Wilkes. Fauré's organ loft antics seem positively saintly when compared to the list of misdemeanors that got Thomas Wilkes the sack from Chichester Cathedral in 1616. Already in trouble for urinating on the dean during evensong a couple of years earlier, Wilkes was finally given his marching orders when his habit of being drunk at the consul and swearing loudly in services got too much. Extraordinarily, he was soon reinstated, and despite there being no let-up in his love of either bottle or blasphemy, continued in the post until his death in 1623. And three more badly behaved composers coming up next week. So stay tuned.
Just what I feel. Drink scotch and whiskey all night long.
Steely Dan's Deacon Blues introduces our jazz and blues music news. It's titled, How Steely Dan Created Deacon Blues. Donald Fagen and Walter Becker of Steely Dan explains the 1977 hit Deacon Blues. This is published in the Wall Street Journal, WSJ.com, on the 10th of September, 2015, written by Mark Myers. As midlife crises go, Steely Dan's Deacon Blues ranks among the most melodic and existential. Recorded for the album Asia in 1933, the song details the bored existence of a ground-down suburbanite and his romantic fantasy of life as a jazz saxophonist. Written by Walter Becker and Donald Fagen in 1976, Deacon Blues was released in 1977 on Steely Dan's album Asia, which is the fall reached number 3 on Billboard's album chart, where it remained for 7 consecutive weeks. The song also was a hit single in the early 1978, with Steely Dan appearing in New York at the Beacon Theater from October 6 through 17. Mr. Fagen, Mr. Becker, guitarist Larry Carlton, and saxophonist Tom Scott and Pete Christlieb recalled the writing, arranging, and recording of this cult classic. Edited from the interviews, we have this. Donald Fagen said, Walter and I wrote Deacon Blues in Malibu, California, when we lived out there. Walter would come over to my place and we'd sit at the piano. I had no idea for a chorus. If a college football team like the University of Alabama could have a grandiose name like Crimson Tide, the nerds and losers should be entitled to a grandiose name as well. And as noted in an interview from magazine.wfu.edu on the 17th of September 2015 by Maria Henson, in the article Mystery Solved, Deacon Blues, It Wasn't Us They Were Singing About, Becker says, Donald had a house that sat on top of a sand dune with a small room with a piano. From the window you could see the Pacific in between the other houses. Crimson Tide didn't mean anything to us except the exaggerated grandiosity that bestowed on winners. Deacon Blues was the equivalent for a loser in our song. Fagen adds, when Walter came over, we started on the music, then started filling in more lyrics to fit the story. At that time, there had been a lineman with the Los Angeles Rams and the San Diego Chargers, Deacon Jones. We weren't serious football fans, but Deacon Jones's name was in the news a lot in the 1960s and 70s, and we liked how it sounded. It also had two syllables, which was convenient, like crimson. The name had nothing to do with Wake Forest's Demon Deacons or any other team with a losing record. The only Deacon I was familiar with in football at the time was Deacon Jones. Asia, finally, the album on which this song, Deacon Blues, is included, has been listed as one of the 5 best soft rock albums for a lazy Sunday afternoon by writer E.M. Casalena in the August 25, 2024 issue of AmericanSongwriter.com. That article notes that soft rock is a little hard to define. In general, one could say it's simply a form of rock music that focuses more on lyrical content and melody over the harshness of hard rock's instrumentation. It's certainly more relaxing to listen to on a Sunday afternoon. Asia by Steely Dan leans more towards yacht rock, but it's nevertheless a leisurely soft rock gem. Asia boasts Steely Dan's recognizable roughness when it comes to vocals, but that roughness doesn't cut through the album in an unpleasant way. It's overall a quite magical album that boasts elements of jazz and blues.
Take the time to make some sense of what you want to say, and cast your words away upon the waves.
Oasis's Master Plan introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled The 15 Greatest Oasis Songs Ranked. This is written by Matt Mitchell, August 25, 2024, in PaceMagazine.com. As exclusively reported by The Times on Saturday, August 24, it appears that an Oasis reunion may be imminent. Jonathan Dean wrote that the Gallagher brothers have squashed their long-standing beef with one another and agreed to play concerts at Heaton Park in Manchester in 2025. 15 years ago, Oasis played their then-final gig at V Festival, and since then, Liam and Noel have kept their distance and focused on their respective solo projects. Over the course of it all, England's greatest living pair of brothers have publicly thrown jabs at one another, but that all seems to be water under the bridge. The summer of 2025 is looking impressive, with a 10-night stint at Wembley Stadium, presumed to be on the table along with Glastonbury headlining slot, the former of which break Taylor Swift's 8-concert record that she set this year. And with the 30th anniversary of the Definitely Maybe album hitting later this week, the rumors feel extra serendipitous. $20 million on that endless corridor. Say it loud and sing it proud, and they will dance if they wanna dance. Please, brother, take a chance. You know they're gonna go which way they wanna go. We know is that we don't know how it's gonna be. Please, brother, let it be. Life on the other hand. Even the most hardcore Oasis stumpers will agree that the band's post-2002 discography leaves a lot to be desired. So don't be shocked that this ranking is very heavily tilted towards the albums Definitely Maybe and Morning Glory. Ranked at number 15 is Acquiesce. Number 14 is Bring It On Down. 13, Champagne Supernova. 12, Rock and Roll Star. 11, The Master Plan, the song which opened this article. 10, Columbia. Number 9, Morning Glory. 8, Stand By Me. 7, Sad Song. 6, Listen Up. 5, Supersonic. 4, Some Might Say. 3, Live Forever. 2, Gas Panic. And coming in at number 1... That's Slide Away from 1994. You could take any entry from this list and put it here, I'm sure, but no song in Oasis's catalog is as biblical as Slide Away, the penultimate track on Definitely Maybe. It's not just the best Oasis song, but it's one of the greatest love songs ever written. Now that you're mine, I'll find a way of chasing the sun. Let me be the one that shines with you. In the morning when you don't know what to do is poetry that outmuscles Noel's deluge of wall-crumbling guitar playing. It's a tempest of heartbreak woven into hope as Liam sings Slide Away over and over, and Noel sings I Don't Know, I Don't Care, All I Know Is You Can Take Me There behind him. Every piece fastens beautifully into place. Listening to Slide Away is like speaking directly to God. And what a gift for the rest of us that we can do it over and over until our hearts decide to finally burst. So, how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, what did Elvis give to his mother on this very day back in 1956? Was it A, a dog, B, a house, C, a pink Cadillac, or D, a sandwich made out of peanut butter, bacon, and bananas? And the correct answer is answer C, a pink Cadillac. As noted in a 9/17/23 carsales.com article, by 1955, Elvis had bought his first Cadillac, a brand he would continue to be particularly fond of for himself and his closest friends and family, allegedly giving away over 200 Cadillacs during his career. The first pink Cadillac Elvis ever bought was a 1954 Fleetwood Series 60. This car would transport his band as they toured the South. However, it met an early demise after the brake lining caught fire, destroying the car and leaving a devastated Elvis in the aftermath. Loving that car so much and wanting to recreate his first Cadillac, he purchased a new 1955 Cadillac Fleetwood Series 60 in blue with a black roof. Elvis had the car repainted by a neighbor who designed a pink color for Elvis and named the color Elvis Rose. This is the one that he gave to his mother, probably the most famous car in the world. Elvis added the white roof in 1956. Others of his many cars include a 1962 Ford Thunderbird, a 1963 Rolls-Royce Phantom V, and a 1973 Stutz Black Hawk III. And the answer to our second question, what was the name of the George Harrison composition that the former Beatle was found guilty of copying from the song He's So Fine? Was it A, Hey Jude? Was it B, Here Comes the Sun? Was it C, My Sweet Lord? Or was it D, Let It Be? Correct answer? Answer C, My Sweet Lord. As noted in an article by Riley Fitzgerald, published in CosmicMagazine.com, on February 19, 1981, George Harrison was ordered to pay $587,000 for, quote-unquote, subconsciously plagiarizing the Chiffons' 1963 hit single, He's So Fine, while creating his song, My Sweet Lord. I wasn't consciously aware of the similarity to He's So Fine, Harrison reflected in his biography, I, Me, Mine. When I wrote the song, it was more improvised and not fixed. Initially, Harrison was less worried about originality and more concerned with how the public would view his highly public mixing of Indian mantra and Western Christianity. In this regard, his anxiety was misplaced. The song was a hit. But soon after My Sweet Lord had arrived, many began making comparisons to He's So Fine. Harrison, too, was struck by the similarity. Why didn't I realize, he wrote, it would have been very easy to change a note here or there and not affect the feeling of the record. Despite the stigma of the lawsuit, Harrison never regretted writing the song. I don't feel bad or guilty about it, he contended. It saved many a heroin addict's life. I know the motive behind writing the song in the first place far exceeds the legal hassle. The former Beatle wasn't one for the legal complexities, believing that 99% of popular music today was reminiscent of something which had come before. Harrison's former bandmate, John Lennon, may have put it more succinctly. Music is everybody's business, he once shared. It's only the publishers who think people own it. Well, given that this is Paco Bell's B-Day, let's close out today's program with a canon. Well, it's actually Paco Bell's canon in D major. Thank you. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.